From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. Coming up, we'll talk with NPR's David Folkenflik about the risks freelance journalists like James Foley take in war zones and what responsibilities news organizations have for them.
But first, in Iraq, more than a dozen people were killed today when a Shiite militia opened fire against inside a Sunni mosque. And there was also new fighting in the north between Kurds and Islamic militants. Of course, this all follows the release of a video this week showing the brutal killing of journalist James Foley by ISIS or Islamic State. And a man in that video speaks with a British accent. So let's look at the response in the UK. The BBC's defense and diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus joins us from London. And Jonathan, the thinking seems to be that this militant may have been radicalized in the UK and gone to fight in Syria, where Foley was captured in 2012. So what's the reaction to this in Britain?
Well, I think great concern. I mean, this has highlighted once again not just the fact that people thought to have come from Britain have taken a prominent role in this organization. It suggested that three of the individuals guarding Western hostages are indeed jihadists from this country, from Britain. It seems to be a perennial problem that despite the best efforts of the government in trying to put in place a security strategy to try and deal with radicalization and so on. Clearly, once again, this is an indication that the problem is still very much with us.
Mm. And Jonathan, I want to talk a little bit more about that in detail in just a moment. But I am curious, as you've said, for several years now, the British government has known that British nationals have been traveling to and from places like Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. Do we know who some of these individuals are? Are they being closely tracked? I mean, is that a possible avenue of further investigation if this to and fro between the UK and these conflict areas has been going on for some time?
Well, look, it's certainly something that the authorities have monitored closely. Individuals have been interviewed. Some people have been arrested. Some people have been tried and convicted. I think the great difficulty you have is that, you know, with the normal freedoms of movement and so on, typical route, for example, is people flying maybe to Turkey, crossing the Turkish border into Syria, then maybe ending up in Iraq or wherever. One might ask some questions about our NATO ally Turkey as to why it's not doing more to control that border. But I mean, it is very clear that one of the problems of the extremism that's afflicting Iraq at the moment is very much people who have come in transit through Syria. And as far as the foreign contingent of those people go, many of them have entered via Turkey.
Now, Jonathan, this isn't the first time that there's been concern that a British national may have been involved in a particularly violent act in one of these conflict areas. I mean, wasn't it a British national who was said to have driven a suicide truck into a Syrian jail not long ago?
Yes, there have been a number of episodes which have been allegedly linked to Britain's... It just highlights, the difficulty we have here. I mean, I think that, you know, this is a problem that exists on a number of levels. I mean, you know, on the one hand, you have a desire quite properly not to stigmatize a whole and significant minority community in the country. You need the cooperation of that community if you're going to deal with this problem. And indeed, I say community, we're really talking about communities because there isn't a single monolithic Muslim entity in Britain. People come from different places, different backgrounds, live in different parts of the country and so on. One has to say, I think quite honestly, this whole debate is afflicted by also a strong degree of, I suppose, what you might call political correctness. It's which is to say in this sense that it's a very sensitive area to deal with. But equally, you know, there is the difficulty that with the growing sort of transnationality of communications, that people are becoming part of global stories. They are becoming involved in stories a very, very long way away. And obviously, in some cases, they feel compelled, for whatever reason, to take action and become participants themselves.
Well, on the other hand, there are many in the UK who are finding very clear language on how to talk about this. We have some tape from Kim Howells, former chair of Parliament's Intelligence and Security Committee. He recently told BBC Wales that the radicalization of British citizens is both a political and religious failure. So let's listen.
The imams, the religious leaders within those communities have never done enough to counter it, let alone governments. They've allowed those communities to become isolated instead of trying to integrate with the rest of society. And they've said, well, that's all right. That's multiculturalism. Well, I'm afraid we're paying a very, very bitter price for that now.
Jonathan, does the government of David Cameron also believe that it's paying a bitter price for this right now? What is the Cameron government going to do or says it's going to do, if anything?
Well, I think clearly over the first instance at the moment is to try and identify this individual and indeed other individuals. More broadly, clearly there is going to be an attempt to look at the government's broader strategies for dealing with countering radicalization and so on. It's a very difficult and sensitive area. I mean, it's interesting, the Times newspaper in London today commented, obviously we've got the First World War very much on our minds with the centenary, mm-hmm. and it commented that today there are fewer Muslim recruits in the British Army than there are, we believe, people who have gone out to fight for Islamic State in the Middle East. Now, that's a fairly extraordinary statistic. And it's a particularly extraordinary statistic when you think back. There were tens of thousands of Muslim troops involved in the fighting on the Western Front, you know, then part of what was the Indian Army of the Empire. It's a footnote, if you like, to this story. But a number of people have commented that perhaps this centenary of the First World War would have been an opportunity to highlight this shared heritage and this common story in a way which would perhaps throw a rather different light on what is going on in the contemporary world around us.
Interesting. We all live our histories, whether we like it or not. The BBC's defence and diplomatic correspondent, Jonathan Marcus, speaking to us today from London. Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you.